From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino Extra, a short audio report from the world of Latino arts and culture. I'm Felix Contreras. In 2009, PBS aired a series called Latin Music USA, a historical overview about Latin music made here in the U.S. and how it influenced mainstream popular culture throughout the decades. On April 28th and May 5th, our friends at PBS are airing an encore presentation of that acclaimed series. And to help us spread the word about the work of our fellow public media producers, we invited Adriana Bosch, the co-creator and senior producer of the series, to chat a little bit about what we can expect to see and hear.
In the United States, this is Latin music. And this is Latin music. This is Latin music. And this is Latin music.
First off, I asked her about a description of the show and the idea that the music is as diverse as the Latino community.
Well, I think that anytime you do anything with Latinos in the United States, you face the same challenge. There are different experiences that intersect with American reality. And so you have to line them up in a way that makes sense narratively, also makes sense regionally, and that pay attention to the particularities of each culture. And so we did this in this show as well. So yes, we wanted to represent as much of the Latino experience as we could through music, and that implied that we had to do Southwest Tejano, we had to do Chicano rock, we had to do salsa, we had to do jazz, we had to do a myriad of experiences. The commonalities are not always there. And almost all the time what you find as the commonality is the American element in the music.
In what way?
Because, well, you know, you go to conjunto, you have an accordion in conjunto, which is, you know, Czech derived and Polish derived in the Mexican border, on the Mexican border, in Texas, in everywhere else. How do you match that with, you know, a conga in New York that comes, you know, that comes from Cuba and goes into jazz in New York?
Okay, here's an excerpt from the show taking us back to the 1950s and that American element. And in this case, it's the story of Latino musicians who sort of hid their ethnicity as they made a crossover into mainstream culture.
Cannibal and the Headhunters, too, lived in the barrio and picked up R&B harmonies from their African-American neighbors.
There was this black group called the Showcases. They would pass in front of my house, and they would sing and harmonize and hang around together. It was a beautiful thing. And I would follow them, and I'd just be in awe, just following them around and just watching them sing and harmonize together. And it was great, man. And they took those black guys, took this Chicano guy, and took him under their wing and showed me how to harmonize, showed us all how to harmonize.
Too many teardrops for one heart to be crying.
Question Mark and the Mysterians had a number one hit with 96 Tears, sung by Rudy Martinez, the son of migrant field workers in Michigan. Sam the Sham of Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs was actually Domingo Zamudio of Dallas, Texas.
Our intention was to find the point of intersection and follow that point of intersection between Latinos and American culture as it existed when they arrived in the United States, and how that fusion created, intersection created musical fusions. So we followed pretty much that. That's where our nose went. For example, we did not spend a lot of time on the rumba, even though the rumba was, you know, and the conga was a great phenomenon in the 1930s. Why? Because, you know, that didn't really create a new genre in the United States at the time. So we went with machito and the Afro-Cubans, because that did create a fusion and created a new form of jazz in the United States, where the Latino percussion section became very much part of the
You know, the Latin music in the United States, I mean, it's such a wide ocean to dive into. Like, what was that decision process like? How did you decide what to include And how did you, and more importantly, how did you decide what to leave out?
Those are the toughest decisions, I think, when you do something like this. And and essentially, we follow the fusion. Our intention was to find the point of intersection and follow that point of intersection between Latinos and American culture as it existed when they arrived in the United States. And how that fusion created, intersection created musical fusions. So we followed pretty much that. That's where our nose went.
Their search for those fusions led them to the 1970s, salsa, and the story of Fania Records.
By the early 70s, Fania was set to explode. The catalyst was a single night's concert in a former roller skating rink in Midtown Manhattan, the Cheetah Club. The label had gathered its best talent to create the Fania All-Stars, led by Johnny Pacheco. They were a supergroup, the cream of New York's Latin scene, though they didn't sound like it at the afternoon's rehearsal.
That day, when they were rehearsing, it was horrendous. And we were saying, this is going to be terrible.
It was like a corral full of peacocks, really. It was not easy. The egos, I remember that I brought a chart that Hector and I had written. I won't say who did it, but one of the old-timers took it and threw it on the floor, and we couldn't play it, so I was very pissed. But Jerry said, oh, take it easy, Willie, go ahead. So I went and I played. And we did it, and it was great.
The place was completely packed, you know. The police and firemen came, you know, they blocked, you know, people couldn't get in. There was a line around the block, boom.
After the third number, we knew it was a happening.
That was one of the most amazing nights that you could ever witness in music.
That night at the Cheetah has been called the birth of salsa. It was the moment when many strands of music converged in New York to create the Latin sound of the 70s.
It seems like you guys had the same challenges that the, for example, the Latin Grammys have in trying to give equal light or try to spread as much light as possible on all the genres in a way that reflects everybody getting their own time in the sun in a way.
Well, I'm not sure the sun was apportioned accordingly to the brightness of the we tried to be as fair as we could. We tried to be as representative as we could, but we also had a musical journey that we needed to tell. And I think, in a way, that musical journey, even though it is divided in four distinct chapters that deal with more or less one or another group of Latinos, there is a narrative of a musical journey hidden in there, where you see a progression of the Latino presence in the United States and the Latino influence in American culture. And it grows through the series. We might be back in history, but when you come out at the time that the narrative, you're supposed to catch up sort of the chronological flow of the series, you see the progression of that narrative in the Latino presence in American culture. And I'm referring particularly to, you know, let's just say the year 2000, 1998 to 2003, 4, 5, and how there is a maturing of Latin music and also a commercialization of music and an understanding that this is something that can be sold. This is something that is profitable. This is something that has, you know, that an industry, that can support an industry and that can get support from the industry to really make a huge splash in America. And that includes, you know, everybody. Mexicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans. I mean, you have Colombians, you have their Selena, you have their Linda Ronstadt, you have Los Lobos, you have Gloria Estefan, Ricky Martin, Shakira. So you have this incredible number of artists that are united in this Latino wave, and that's where, in a way, the narrative led to in the series. And finally, the breakthrough of Latin music into the so-called American mainstream. As you know, there is no such thing as an American mainstream that is different or distinct from Latinos, because we're part of the mainstream. You know, we've been there we've helped build that mainstream, and we're a presence within it.
It's like the idea of me loving Los Lobos as much as I love the Rolling Stones.
Exactly. You know, I remember I was in Boston. I was in graduate school when I first heard La Pistola y el Corazón. Oh, I was blown away.
That was Los Lobos' acoustic album of Mexican folk music.
Yeah, I mean, to have a rock and roll band, an alternative rock and roll band, you know, punkish and, you know, and cool and all that, singing in Spanish and corridos. It was, wow, you know, that stuff blows your mind.
Los Lobos became not just a popular band that crossed demographics, they also became advocates for traditions of all kinds.
During the 1980s, a band from East Los Angeles readily crossed cultural borders with their music, ignoring barriers of language and race. They called themselves Los Lobos, the Wolves. They'd been young rockers from East LA's Garfield High in the 1970s, when the Chicano movement inspired them to put their electric guitars on the shelf and explore their musical roots.
The Mexican music was always available, but, you know, being young kids, growing up on rock and roll, you know, we didn't really care about it too much. But as Chicano cultural renaissance started to take hold, it fed into the notion of us playing traditional music.
We're doing it just for fun in our backyards, you know, and just kind of learning old Mexican songs just as a hobby, really. And that's how it all started. Chicanos somos señores.
Let's talk about the series itself and some of the particulars. Now, had the story of Latin music made here in the U.S. ever been told in such a way before your series aired?
Not that I'm aware of. We really came out of the experience of rock and roll. WGBH with the BBC did a series on the history of rock and roll, a 13-part series that was really kind of, you know, one of those tentpole big, you know, series that kind of try to define, you know, something for history. And coming out of that, Elizabeth Dean and I at the cafeteria started thinking about, you know, I didn't work on rock and roll, but I started thinking about where to go next. And the idea of doing something on salsa came up. And we started working on this idea of doing something on salsa. And, you know, we couldn't really get traction. And then we're sitting there one day, and Ricky Martin appears all of a sudden at the Grammys singing La Copa de la Vida, The Cup of Life.
Was the show intended for people who weren't familiar with the history? Because I would imagine somebody like a Dominican person in New York may not have been familiar with the history of Tejano out in the West.
Essentially, when you do these things, you have many audiences. It's like teaching a class. You always have the students that have done the homework, that know everything, and you need to be able to speak to them. You need to be able to show them and give them something that they will recognize and that they will see value in it. And then you have the people who don't know much, and so you have to then pave the way for them to enter into the story, and you have to tell the story in a way that facilitates that. And then you have to appeal to your mainstream audience. You don't want them lost because they, you know, when people get lost, you know, the next thing is the remote control. and you want to, at the same time, and I think that's more to your question, you want to unite Latinos in a common experience and to recognize that, you know, even though you're talking about, I don't know, you're talking about Austin or San Antonio and New York, there are similarities in the experiences of Latinos in the United States. And you want Latinos to know each other. You want Latinos to greet each other. You want Latinos to celebrate each other. And we always kept that in mind as well.
Adriana Bosch, thank you so much for coming to join us and talk to us about the show.
Well, thank you. And, you know, by the way, it was a great deal of fun making the series.
De respuestas con el manojo lleno y las venas abiertas vengo.
Latin Music USA airs on your local PBS station at 9 p.m. on April 28th and May 5th. Also, check out the series website. It's pbs.org/WGBH/Latin Music USA, all one word. There you'll find lots of extras like biographies, photos, music samples. It's the power of the internet unleashed for Latin music. This has been Alt Latino Extra. I'm Felix Contreras. Thanks for listening.